Live from the Carter Subaru Studio, this is the Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation tonight, we make it so easy for you to do so. You know, that's the kind of people we are. You can send us a text at 98973. You can send me an email at mynorthwest.com/Jason Rantz. Or, of course, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. And there you can go behind the scenes of the show, find out what everyone on the staff looks like, have conversations with us. I like to fight with some people who give me a hard time. You give me snark, I give you snark right back. But it's all done in fun. It's all fun and games. Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. I'm kind of annoyed with this lead story in this hour, and I wasn't necessarily going to do it, but I figure the news is already out there. I might as well talk about it. It was once just an amazing secret. It's the best-kept secret in the entire country. But it's all out of the bag now. It's the secret of a feature that is now available to everyone. It potentially will make your life easier, or I'll put it this way, it's going to make your life easier until it doesn't. And of course, I am talking about a Starbucks feature that now lets you pre-order your drink or your food or whatever it is you're getting on the Starbucks app. So as you're actually walking or driving up to the Starbucks, you can jump on your phone, you can fire up the Starbucks app, you can order whatever it is that you're getting. I'll take an Earl Grey tea latte, grande, hold the milk, replace it with heavy cream, sugar-free vanilla, please. Yeah, two bags. No, I saw you put one in there. No, two. You know, it's supposed to be two. Yeah, I see. Yeah, I'm on to you. Not going to cheat me out of that second bag of Earl Grey tea. So you're doing that as you're walking up, and it's like, okay, it'll be ready by the time you get there. They tell you, hey, it'll be ready in about 5 minutes, maybe 7 minutes. And so you just time it with your walk or your drive, and by the time you get there, you get to look at all the poor saps in line. You get to walk in front of them, and you give them a little bit of a look like, yeah, hey, dummy, you should be getting on that Starbucks app. And then you walk up to the bar, and you grab one of your drinks that's already ready for you. It's fantastic. I use it all the time. Now, I'm certain it's been in beta testing. Some markets have had it. It's been expanded. It started actually in Portland. It's been happening in Seattle, certainly on the east side. I don't know, outside of there, those are the only places that I've used it in Washington State. It's amazing. There's this time, every Friday morning, I have an appointment in Bellevue that I have to go to. It's work-related, and I'm out there in Bellevue early in the morning. I get to places perpetually early. That's just a habit of mine. Like, you tell me to be there at 9, you got it, I'm there at 8:15. It's like, oh, gosh, so you try to figure out what exactly you're doing. But every once in a while, there's some traffic, and I'm running a little bit behind, and by behind, I mean I'd get there at like 8:45 instead of 9 o'clock. And there's a Starbucks right across the street. It is always packed. This place there is always a line that will take about 10 minutes. That's how long the line is at the Starbucks. And so I've been using the app, and I've been walking in, like you know, a little arrogantly saying, I'm in the know. I'm taking advantage of the beta testing. Now it's no longer beta. Now everyone's going to have it. And it's really good because, again, you skip the line. And the whole point of this is they throw this out there thinking, hey, this is actually going to increase sales. It's going to make the user experience a little bit better. Here's the chief digital officer for Starbucks, Adam Brotman, talking to Bloomberg.
The pinch point is behind the bar. It's actually the line in the POS. If we can take the pinch point out of the POS, put it in literally the hands of our customers, we can get more capacity and throughput from those same stores. So those stores can do more volume and have a better experience for you as a customer.
Yeah, and not only do they do more volume, but they get you more interested in buying. Because if it's easier, you're like, okay, do I really want to wait? Oh, I don't have to wait in line. I guess. Okay, I'll fine. Fine, I'll do it. I'll jump on that Starbucks app. And that's happened to me multiple times. I've been on the verge of just like not going, and I've decided, oh, yeah, I'll do it.
They even save your order, your previous order. Mm-hmm. So when you have those super complicated orders, you don't have to go through and pick all of those.
What are you saying about my order? What's wrong with my order?
I don't know.
It's too
I
hard.
Can't even tell you what
it's
your
too hard.
Order
it's
is.
It's an Earl Grey tea latte. It's a grande. It's heavy cream instead of the milk. It's paleo. And instead of the regular vanilla, it's sugar-free.
Yeah.
Get it right. Two bags.
Previous order. Done.
I've done that before,
so
I really like it. Now, here's my one problem, though. My problem with this is that now everyone's going to use it. And in theory, or at least a lot more people will use it, in theory, you're going to have a lot more people using something that they didn't used to use. You're still going to have a bit of a line because, you know, it's been out there for the longest time. in this particular market. People are still unwilling to do anything on their phones because they're living in 1997. Oh, my gosh. And so they're not going to – my problem is, what if so many people use it? It doesn't matter about the point of sale anymore. It doesn't matter about the barista who's taking your order. It matters about the baristas who are making your actual coffee, who are making your actual drinks. Because if you've got a whole bunch more people using it because they think it's going to be faster, well, it's not going to be faster anymore. The reason it's currently faster is because so few people are using it. So if you change that, aren't you essentially going to just create the same exact issue just at the point of creating the order? And we're going to see how it goes. I hope it works. I hope everyone's happy. I hope Starbucks makes more money. I like local companies that make a lot of money. And it's interesting, too, because on this app, they push tipping. They push tipping on there, which is perfect for me because I will tip. The issue is I'm usually purchasing something with a card. I never have cash, coin, nothing on me at all. And so if I'm purchasing a drink, I'm not giving you a dollar tip. Sorry, I'll give you 50 cents, especially because I go every single day. I'll give you 50 cents, but I'm not going to write 50 cents on my credit card thing because that's confusing, and then I got to do the extra math because my order is like $4.60. Like, no, I'm not doing any of that, so I just don't do it. On the app, you just hit 50 cents. They give it to you as an option, and I do it all the time. So, you know, there you go. I can leave the 50-cent tip, and I'm not going to be judged. Now, whether or not people do that, I have no idea. Now, speaking of tipping and whether or not people are doing it, a major, major, major player in the restaurant industry has come out this week against tipping, saying, no, 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 tipping is actually bad for my staff members. Tom Colicchio, he has been a judge on Top Chef. He's got a ton of restaurants out there, mostly in New York. I think he's got a couple in Las Vegas. He decided to come out and push this no tipping policy. It's a no tipping policy that's happening at one of his spots in New York City. It's called Kraft. It's a policy that's only happening during lunch. They're not doing this towards dinner yet, but they might, depending on how it goes over at their lunch service. And he's doing it because he thinks, hey, the wait staff that I employ, they're actually going to make more money this way. He says, according to Eater.com, it's time for a change. It's time to pay the servers a salary. Waiters don't want to work lunch shifts because they don't make as much money. So in a way, we're saying you don't have to worry about what you're going to make tip-wise, and you'll be fine. So I think this will be positive for the service staff. And to afford this, obviously he's going to have to raise money, especially when you're talking about New York City, which is incredibly, incredibly expensive to have a business in. They're, of course, surprise, surprise, they're upping the prices on the menu. Now, we've seen that happen here. There have been quite a few restaurants in the Seattle area that have decided to do away with the tips, or at least they're starting to think about doing away with the tips. One of the places is Ivor's Seafood. Here's president of the company called Bob Donegan. He was on the show not too long ago explaining how he was handling this.
The meal that you spent $10 on last year, you added $1.70 tip. If you are a typical customer, you added a 17% tip. So our new prices will incorporate that along with a 4% price increase. So the amount that's different this year from last year is only 4%. So yes, our prices are going up, but not very much.
Now, Tom Colicchio says waitstaff should no longer be beholden to someone who might not like the way they look. And that kind of struck me because I never really thought about that conversation, this idea that you are judging the wage, the tip that you're giving these people based on how they look. And, you know, the more I thought about it, it does kind of make sense because I've totally tipped higher for someone who's attractive. Totally. Why? Because I think that they're going to see the tip I gave them and suddenly want to date me. I mean, that's how people
think.
Makes sense. I don't necessarily think that the quote unquote less attractive or the ugly wait staff are getting less in tips than they otherwise would have received. Let's say you were blind to how they actually looked. You had no idea how you're always going to give to me. You're going to give whatever that percentage is that you're going to give. You just end up giving people who are more attractive a little bit extra. People do that. And now you're punishing people for being attractive. Right? That just makes me sad. But here's part of but it's an interesting perspective that I haven't really heard talk about too often. And actually, I'd be curious to find out if people would be honest about their tipping habits. Do you tip people less if they're ugly? or if you perceive them to be ugly, send me a text, 98973,
98973. I work at Jackson Park Golf Course, too, and in the restaurant, when they have attractive girls, the restaurant manager says they bring in at least $100 more a day in tips. Now, that's guys that have money, but they're tipping because there's attractive girls there.
But they're not tipping the unattractive ones less. That's what I am.
Well, they're not tipping when there's unattractive people working.
They don't tip at all?
No.
No way.
Well, the tip jar will be
$100
we're talking about
a tip jar.
Total,
okay.
Yeah.
That's different. That is different.
Sure, yeah. It's not a full-on restaurant wait on you type thing where people are getting stiff.
Okay,
but
that is completely different. That maybe would be the case in general because the tip jar. By the way, you don't have to guilt trip me into putting a little dollar in your tip jar. Okay, let's get rid of the tip jar. I'll leave a tip on the receipt if I want to. Okay, get this thing out. Get it out of my face. Get it. And I'm talking to you, Jeff. Get it off of that table. I'm not going to leave you a tip. You're the board op for the show. That's your job. You're asking for a tip. Tip me, please. Yeah, I know what you make. You make good enough money. Okay, so send me a text, 98973. So New York Post linked to a piece on eater.com that also pushed this argument against tipping.
One issue. White non-Hispanics are most likely to work as tipped employees, earning slightly more on average than those who work in the back of the house. And here's another problem. Women considered conventionally attractive made more in tips than other women, or even men. This is particularly disturbing with the fact that 90% of female restaurant workers have reported experiencing sexual harassment on the job. And then there's this. Diners of all races regularly tip their black servers less than their white servers.
Now, I've never been a waiter, so I'm not making any of these comments informed by something I did in my past. On the surface, to me, it just doesn't seem like it would actually be a good deal for the wait staff. I just don't understand it, especially if we're talking about a Tom Colicchio restaurant, which, if I'm correct, they tend to be quite expensive. Like, I feel like if you work at certain restaurants, you're going to make way bigger tips based upon your service and based upon the clientele than if you do away with the tips, because you can always run into that person who will leave you that, you know, $100 tip or the $50 tip on something that was only a $50 meal. My sense is you end up losing that opportunity, but more so from the customer perspective, which is something I certainly understand. Are you going out of your way to go above and beyond when serving me? Like, if you know that you're not working for my tip, when you know you are not, you know, trying to impress me with your service to the point where, oh, I'm trying to get him to give me just a little bit more because I've got, you know, my rent is due coming up soon. I'm behind a little bit where I thought I would be. I'm going to go really, really extra hard to make sure that I'm doing a really good job for this guy. Don't you lose that? Isn't that gone? Isn't that something that you no longer, you have no incentive to do anything beyond what it is you're paying to do? And I know on the surface people are like, well, that's all you should do. You should only do what you're paid to do. Okay, fine. But let's be honest. Ambitious people tend to make it to where they want to go a lot faster. Ambitious people, if assuming they are, you know, qualified, they get to, you know, the next level much faster than the people who are like, okay, I'm coming in at 9, I'm leaving at 5, and I'm just doing the bare minimum. Cool, you're doing the bare minimum, and that's awesome. I love that you actually do the job. But it's the person next to you, in the cubicle next to you, who's doing way more and taking on more responsibility and asking for more responsibility, being ambitious. That's the person who gets noticed. That's the person who gets ahead. Now, it's really easy for that to happen in an office space, but when you're a waiter, when you're a waitress, and there's no more indication as to whether or not you're doing a better job, because I presume that if I'm the boss, I can look and see, oh, wow, Jeff just got 30% higher tips than everybody else. Nicole got negative 10. What's going on? Like, I could make that judgment and say, okay, Nicole, let's have a conversation. I need to bring you up a little bit so you're doing a little bit better. Jeff, whatever you're doing, awesome, cool. Keep doing it. Everyone's giving you like, at least I can look at that. But when you take that out of the equation, what exactly are you using to judge the wait staff? Because as great of a situation that I've been in when I've had fantastic service, I don't go to like, hey, tell me who's your boss. Okay, and then you go up to the boss and say, I just want you to know, Nicole killed it tonight. Oh, my gosh, she did a fantastic. Like, I don't do that. I leave my appreciation via a bigger tip. So I just wonder if we are taking out the tools in which we can actually judge these people by. Love to get your thoughts. 98973. Meanwhile, let's try and get this story in there while we have a few minutes left. Carrie Dennett is a columnist. I guess she writes for the Seattle Times. And she put out this story that essentially tried to make the point that whenever you go into a grocery store, you should be going not just to the outer aisles, which traditionally is the place where you would go to find the fresher ingredients, the healthy foods. When you go to any grocery store, in general, the sides of the stores, you've got the fresh fruit and vegetables, all the produce there. And in the middle, you kind of get the crap. She's saying, no, 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 no. This is a myth. You can actually find really, really healthy meals in the center aisles. She's mostly wrong, and I want to read to you just a quick bit of her piece in the Times. First, plenty of nutritious, minimally processed real foods are found in the center aisles. Packages of dried beans and whole grains, canned beans, tomatoes, tuna, salmon, and sardines. Ingredients for a lovely homemade vinaigrette, olive oil, vinegar, and Dijon mustard. Spices, coffee, and tea. Frozen fruits and vegetables, which are just as nutritious as their fresh counterparts. Unsweetened sparkling waters. Okay, half the stuff that she said there is not all that healthy. Let's be very clear. The frozen vegetables, when you reheat those vegetables, when you thaw out some of those fruits, you're losing the nutrients. I'm near certain that it happens with the fruit. I'm 100% certain it happens with the vegetables because I've been reading up a whole bunch about this. I read a book on nutrition once, so I'm an expert. When you recook, the heat kills a lot of the nutrients, depending on the vegetables. Some of the vegetables, it actually breaks it down so it's easier to digest. But this idea that you get anything, no. If it comes in a can or it comes in a box, you should not be eating it. 100% of the time, if it comes in a can and it's a food, I'm not talking about spices or coffee or tea. If it comes in a can, if it comes in a box of some sort, do not eat it. It is not healthy for you. The stuff that is healthy is the stuff that is fresh, that is vibrant, that has very clear colors, that was just picked, just chopped up and butchered, just whatever. That's the healthy stuff. She goes, second, the perimeter has been breached by highly processed foods. This has been true for years, but it's a trend that's increasing as consumers vote with their dollars by choosing to purchase fresh, organic food and increasingly skipping the middle aisles. Okay, and, I mean, we're not dumb. Carrie, we're not dumb. I can go on the sides of the stores and not be fooled into, I'm not going to see a big jar of, you know, sugary whatever, and because it's next to an apple, I'm going to go, oh, what this caramel mix that I can dip this apple into, it must be healthy. It's right next to the apple. No one's having these conversations. I feel like when we talk about nutrition, we tend to assume that the reason people are obese and overweight or unhealthy is because they just don't have the education. No, it's because we have the education, we just don't care for whatever reason. Maybe it's because we're addicted to sugar and all this crap, and that's certainly a very valid reason, or we just don't care. We don't necessarily have the willpower. Nor do, you know, we talked about this a little bit last night. You've already got a mate. You can get fat now. They're not going to, what are they going to do, leave you? If only that were my problem. Send me a text, 98973. Send me an email, mynorthwest.com. Click on that inbox. When we come back, life lessons with Jason Rantz. Brand new segment. I'm going to give you some life lessons on your career. I gave you some already. This one I'm critiquing some from Stanford. So relax, people. It's Jason Rantz. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. If you want to join the conversation, we are getting a ton of text messages tonight, 98973. And of course, I would love it if you would like my Facebook page. Just like it over at facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. That is where you go if you want to go behind the scenes of the show. The next story is about State Bill 5052. Wait, what is that? Are you snoring? I'm sorry. Am I bothering you? I'm sorry. Does making your kids like turning your kids into criminals because they do something that almost every single kid does, they're not important to you? Should we not talk about State Bill 5052? Okay, I'm leaving. I'm out. Baby, please don't go. Okay, I won't go, Mike Posner. Thank you for calling me baby, but it's a little you're rushing our relationship a little bit. Let's talk about this bill. So State Bill 5052. On the surface, you're like, I don't want to talk about a state bill. It's kind of boring. I agree. On the surface, it's incredibly boring. But let's talk about something that happens a whole hell of a lot in pretty much every single state in this country. You've got a bunch of adults who are in positions of power, and they come up with these laws that they say, hey, if we pass this, this is actually going to help save the lives of kids, help keep them on the right path. But then when you look at the results of what they actually pass, you're like, wow, you ended up hurting kids. Because State Bill 5052 hurts kids. How does it do it? They turn kids into felons if they're caught with weed. Okay? If a kid is caught with weed, and hard to believe, but kids sometimes smoke weed, this bill has the potential to turn them into felons. Case in point, you just go into Lewiston County, where you've got a trio of kids. One's 14 years old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old. They were doing what some kids tend to do, which is they experiment with the weed. And, of course, they got caught with marijuana. And because of this law, as it was originally interpreted, they're supposed to face felony counts of possession, which leads up to 5 years in prison. 5 years in prison for having some marijuana on your person. 5 years. Prosecutor Ben Nichols said at the time, if you are a minor, a person under 21, it's a felony no matter what. According to the Washington Times, Senator Ann Rivers, who's going to join us tonight at 9:32, she's a Republican out of La Center. She said the tougher penalty was designed to deter minors from trying an adult drug. We have to send a message to our kids, she said. This will hurt you in more ways than one if you decide to participate. Now, this is absurd. This is completely absurd. These kids are being hurt more by this law than by smoking a joint. Can we all understand that? Yes, marijuana is absolutely dangerous for kids. No, I do not want any kid to smoke marijuana. If you are under 21, you should under no circumstances smoke marijuana. It will do very bad things to you if you take it on after regular use, including a shrinking of the brain. No one wants to have shrunken brains. But here's the absolute truth. I'm sorry if this, if parents, if you've got kids listening, you know, and you don't want them to hear the truth about marijuana, cover their ears for a second, but only for a few seconds, because I want them to listen to the rest of the show. Smoking a few times, not going to hurt you. The truth is, the vast majority of people out there, if you smoke one time, if you take one puff, the world is not going to end. You are not going to have a shrunken brain. Your development is not going to be stunted. You will be okay. I don't want you doing it because it's addictive. I don't want you doing it because it's illegal. I don't want you doing it because I fear the decisions you're going to make if you continue to smoke marijuana. However, the truth is, smoking it one time, not going to kill you. And to say otherwise is nothing more than fear-mongering, nothing more than nonsense. It's not based in actual science. And if we're going to start throwing 14-year-olds in jail for 5 years because they had a little weed on them, that's going to nearly ruin his life. That ruins lives, throwing kids in jail. Now, thankfully, in this case, the prosecutor decided, okay, I'm going to change my mind. I consulted with some people. I reconsidered. And so now what he's doing, instead of a felony, he's pursuing misdemeanor charges, which is obviously a lot lighter than a felony charge, but it's still, to me, too much. We should not be charging kids with anything because they're doing something dumb. Over 20% of 10th graders smoked weed in the last year. Almost 40% of seniors smoked weed in the last year. We're going to give felony or even misdemeanor records to all those kids? Really? That's what you want to do? Is that ruining a kid's life? Or maybe we should focus more on the education efforts, explaining to kids why they shouldn't take up marijuana, explaining to kids the actual studies. And yes, as parents, as adults, be a little understanding, just a little understanding of what it's like being a kid. And yes, some kids are going to smoke weed. Yes, some kids are going to think about smoking weed. The reason they're doing that, there's a plethora of reasons, right? From peer pressure to they just think it's cool, to they're really curious because you guys have decided to lie about how dangerous it can be. And I'm talking specifically to the people who pretend that if you smoke a joint one time, well, you're just going to die. Like, you've got the total fear-mongering out there, and the kids, they know you're fear-mongering. They know you're not being truthful when you go all the way to the extremes. Just be honest. Especially, there was not too long ago, and I think it was a doctor over at Seattle Children's who did an interview with King Five or one of the local television stations, and they basically said, you should not admit to kids that you smoked marijuana as a kid. That's not the right conversation to have with your kids. Your goal is to just keep them off drugs. I totally disagree. If you smoked marijuana as a kid, as a teenager, as a young adult, you should absolutely be honest with your kid. You should absolutely be honest with your kid. Because one, when you lie to them, they probably can sense that you're lying. But number two, use that experience as to why you don't want your kid to smoke marijuana. Say, hey, you know what? I thought it was cool. I used to smoke a lot when I was a kid. And you know what happened, Stevie? You know what happened, Sally? Well, I made some really dumb choices. And then go over the choices you made as a result of your impairment due to marijuana. Talk about how lazy it made you feel. Talk about how you didn't do so well in school. And ultimately, talk about how you disappointed your own parents when you smoked marijuana. And yes, Stevie, Sally, you're going to disappoint me if you smoke marijuana. Like, have those conversations, but I don't think we need to go to a point where we're getting the law involved. I don't think we need to go to a point where we're now telling kids, oh, well, if you have one indiscretion that, you know, was a total mistake, we're going to ruin your life for it. And I know there are a lot of people out there saying, okay, relax, Jason. A misdemeanor is not that big of a deal. Well, you tell that to a 14-year-old kid. Okay, you tell that to a 14-year-old kid who you're taking to court and you are finding them guilty, you're trying to find them guilty of a misdemeanor charge. Like, they're not going to have the same kind of reaction that an adult has to that kind of scenario. Your life is informed by understanding what a misdemeanor is and what the big context is. The kid's life, they're not informed by that position because they don't know, because they're kids, because it's a 14-year-old kid. So understand the context of all of this. I'm really, really annoyed by this story because we're just missing an opportunity to truly teach a lesson to a kid as to why they shouldn't be smoking weed. We're going to talk with Ann Rivers, a state senator who's actually behind this bill. She's going to join us at 9:32. Now, to be fair, she's come out and said, whoa, you're all misinterpreting this bill's intent. So we're going to see what she can do about it when we talk to her tonight at 9:32. But what's coming up next? I don't know. Do I want to do this? Ted Cruz, Carly Fiorina, they're going on the late night talk circuit. I really don't like when any politician does it. I feel like it cheapens them. I'll explain why when we come back in 4 minutes. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text, 98973. Send me those likes on the Facebook page. Love it when you like the Facebook page because that feeds into my ego. Big shout out to Sam, Jim, Stephanie, Sheb, Jim, Nick, and Steven. All new likes tonight at facebook.com/Jason Rand Show. See, other people won't admit that it's all about the ego. I'm open and honest. We tell you to fact check everything. I just have to throw it all out there. It's an ego play. I like it.
You're not rejecting kids when they ask for your autograph. You know, when big groups come up, you're signing autographs left and right, right?
Well, we have a rule. Now, you haven't been with the show long enough to know this rule about interacting with me in public. So get a little notebook. There you go. Take out the notebook and get the good pen. No, not the Bic, the one that I gave you for Hanukkah. Yeah, that one. Okay, so this is the rule. If you see me in public and I am with other people, and I'm with like a friend or maybe I'm on a date or something. And you can tell if I'm on a date because I won't look like a total slob and I will have shaven. You're supposed to go like this. You're supposed to point, mouth open like, oh, Jason, I'm such a fan of yours. Oh, my God, you're the best radio doctor host in the whole wide world. Can I have your autograph? Like, that's it. But if I'm alone, stay away. It makes me uncomfortable. If I'm alone, I get so uncomfortable when someone comes up to me and is like, hey, aren't you on the radio? I'm like, I am. Hi. I really like your show. Thank you. I don't know what to say. I'm not good with small talk. I don't like small talk. But if I'm with other people, at least you can make me feel like I'm more important than I actually am. And to them, I'll be like this huge A-list celebrity. Don't ask me for an autograph though, because I won't sign. I'm like beast mode. I go into jerk mode and I say no. I'll charge if you want to pay for it. No, I'm kidding. I'll sign some. I was at an event not too long. I've only been asked for my autograph like a half dozen times. This one time, this little kid, he came up to me and he asked for an autograph, and he knew who I was. And the kid, I'm not really good at ages. I'm gonna say he was maybe 11. He asked for the autograph, and I think he was with his mom. He was with someone who was a little bit older. And after I sign it, and he walks away, stops paying attention. I turned to the mother, and I said it in jest, but I was totally serious. I was like, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "What's wrong with you? Why are you letting him listen to the show? This is not a show for a 10 or 11 year old." And she laughed because I said it with a little bit of a joke sort of tone, but I was judging her. I was judging her.
Did she have a response?
She laughed.
Oh,
Jason, I love your show. And then I gave her a fist bump, and then I went on my way.
Well, there are worse things that he could be doing at night.
That's true. You could be smoking the weed, little kid, and don't do that. Okay, something else you can be doing really late at night, which a lot of people do after they listen to the show for the full 3 hours every single night, is they go on and they check out the late night television nonsense. You got Stephen Colbert, you've got Jimmy Fallon. You've got, I think if you stay up until like 4 a.m., you still get Carson Daly, like his music show. So now you're starting to have all of the politicians go out and do the interviews on these things. And I hate it. And part of the reason I hate it, and it doesn't matter if it's a sitting president who is a Republican or Democrat or someone who is trying to become president, it just seems like it cheapens the office and it cheapens the candidate. It doesn't seem very presidential when a candidate goes on like The View. When a candidate goes on Jimmy Fallon or Late Show with Stephen Colbert. And with Late Show, last night, apparently, Ted Cruz went on. Ted Cruz, senator from Texas, he is running for the nomination for the Republican side. I'm not particularly a fan of Ted Cruz. I think he, speaking of ego, I think he's got a huge ego and he does things more about himself and less about the people. That's just my personal take. He was on, and he was asked about his stance on gay marriage. He got some jeers.
And, you know, you mentioned before, you know, you said, Cruz, you're a very conservative guy. Listen, what I'm fighting for are simple principles. Live within our means.
Mm-hmm.
Stop bankrupting our kids and grandkids.
Well, some of the
follow
kids are
the Constitution.
And no gay marriage. And no gay marriage.
Well, no, actually, let's be precise. Under the Constitution,
yes,
marriage is a question for the states. If you want to change the marriage law,
it doesn't mention marriage in the Constitution.
We have had a country for over 200 years.
Yeah. So you may be right. You may be right, but it doesn't mention marriage in the Constitution. You believe that marriage.
And that's exactly why it's a question for the states, because the 10th Amendment says if it doesn't mention it, it's a question for the states. That's in the Bill of Rights. Everything that is not mentioned is left to the state. So if you want to change the marriage laws,
I'm asking what you want.
I believe in democracy. I believe in democracy, and I don't think we should trust.
Guys, however you feel, he's my guest, so please don't boo him.
Yeah, because he asked the gotcha question about gay marriage because he wanted cheers from the audience.
I don't think we should entrust governing our society to five unelected lawyers in Washington. Why would you possibly hand over the rights of 320 million Americans to five lawyers in Washington to say, we're going to decide the rules that govern you? If you want to win an issue, go to the ballot box and win at the ballot box. That's the way the Constitution was designed.
Now, I mean, to that point, he actually has a very good point. I don't necessarily agree that gay marriage isn't a constitutionally protected right per se, but I am someone who would prefer people go to the ballot box to enact change rather than try to get a court to enact change. And the simple reason behind that is because when someone tells you to do something, the natural reaction for a lot of people is like, wait, what? Who the hell are you to tell me what to do? Even if you actually agree with them, you're like, whoa, I kind of resent you telling me I know what to do. You don't need to tell me. You don't need to force me. And so I would rather see this organic, this natural sort of move towards whatever it is that the court is going to decide. So a lot of what he said resonates with me. I'm still not voting for him. I was going to vote maybe. I was thinking about Carly Fiorina, but apparently she sang on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and I'm not even, should I play just a second? Okay.
My name's Nick, and I'm lazy. Please don't take a walk with me. I'd rather stay right here at home instead. I want to lie back.
Yeah, I can't do that. So you almost have my vote, Carly. I'm kidding. It's the Jason Rancho.